This is ACC Nation, and thanks for letting us join you on your journey. For those of you who are watching on YouTube, that's Will Ogenin, and I'm Jim Quist. Let's talk ACC sports. The Major League Baseball draft started out with a big surprise, especially for the family. The man selected is the first pick in the first round. In fact, he didn't even have enough of a confirmation to make him comfortable until about an hour before the draft called his name. That's very unusual. But for Louisville catcher Henry Davis, it was a dream come true. He wasn't on any mock draft big boards, Will. He just wasn't that first go-to guy in the 2021 draft, but Pittsburgh decided he was their man. The pick value, $8.42 million. Not bad work if you can get it.
Right. And you look at, you know, the position of catcher, and there aren't a lot of superstars at that position. I can think of, and you know, it doesn't churn out a ton of Hall of Famers either. I remember one who went 1-1 about 20 years ago, who will likely end up in the Hall of Fame, who went to high school some, 15, 20 minutes from here, but goes by the name of Joe Mauer. One of the greatest, best hitting catchers of all time. So maybe he won't turn out like Joe Mauer, but I'm saying it's a rarity to see catchers go 1-1. And I think it's kind of it's kind of the weird thing about the MLB draft is the way they slot is like slotting, and you pay, they might underpay one guy to overpay another guy. It's one of those things. If you don't understand the way the MLB draft goes, it's different than like the NBA draft or the NFL draft where, okay, this is what they're likely going to make. Little different in the MLB draft. Hard for me to explain here, but it's one of those things, you know, that's what Google's for, right? But it's a little bit different. Let's just say that.
I will say that the big difference for me, I shared this with you earlier today. It's boring.
That is true.
If you sit there through the entire thing, it just drags on forever. There's not the, though they have been doing better, I will give them that much. And the fact that they moved the draft to July has, I think, added a bit to it. It was a plus. I know the guys who were doing, hosting and talking and the analysis and stuff for the MLB. They indicated that it's given teams a better opportunity to take a look at some of these players, given the better exposure, time to clean up some fundamentals as they got into postseason or, let's say, playing in the Cape Cod League.
And not only that, but if I remember correctly, the draft was going on during the College World Series a lot of the time, too.
Yes, it was.
So they really can't revel in the moment because they're, prepping for a game. So now that they did it this way, you have that opportunity and you get a little more film on them, too. And that obviously can be a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. And I'm sure it really helped a guy like Andrew Abbott, who went, in the second round today.
Yes, I do believe you're correct. Yep, he did. Well, other notable names in the first round out of the ACC, Sal Frelick of Boston College at number 15 going to Milwaukee, and Ryan Cusick of Wake Forest is headed to Atlanta, and Matthew Nelson of Florida State is headed to the Reds. Two catchers, speaking of catchers, go in the first. And notably so, another one coming out of Florida State heading directly into the pros. And let me just point out, Buster Posey, who came out of Florida State, has made his mark, certainly, on baseball, college baseball especially, and is doing the same thing, I think, in the pros.
Still going.
The one thing that and it amazes me because I know a guy or knew a guy, he's no longer around, that was a pro catcher, and he shared a lot of things with us as kids about the impact that it has on your body. It just wears you out. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. The wear and tear on your knees especially.
I couldn't imagine
the up and down and. Right. Yeah, that's why a lot of the best ones end up changing positions. And I brought up Joe Mauer a little bit ago. He ended up playing, first base at the end of his career. And I think Craig Biggio, I believe he started out a catcher at one point. He ended up being a second baseman, and he's a Hall of Famer. Posey, he's his year 34 season. He just turned 34, still catching, and in fact is an all-star.
It's pretty amazing that at 34 you're still doing that at that level, you
Yeah,
know?
at an all-star caliber level,
Right.
and yeah, that's it's an amazing it's shows he's really been a really good player.
Yeah, he's been an amazing player. I love watching him when he was in college at Florida State, and of course moving over to the Giants later. So here's the thing that I really. And before I guess I go any further here, I just I was watching a game and watching the importance, and actually watching some highlights too on YouTube of several games, and noting the importance. I guess I really didn't completely absorb this until just the other day. How important, and probably the catcher is the most critical piece out there on that field in my eyes. Now, that can be argued, obviously. I mean, a lot of people say, well, it's the pitcher or it's this or that or whatever. But man, that catcher makes so many things happen. It's amazing. I think they're underrated in a lot of ways and underappreciated. So,
A lot of their success, a lot of the pitcher's success is dependent on a good catcher who knows how to call their game. I mean, I think of just thinking of somebody off the top of my head, Eddie Perez, who was basically Greg Maddux's personal catcher because he knew exactly what to do. And another thing about catchers, a lot of them turn out to be managers too. I'm th just thinking, Joe Girardi, he was a longtime catcher. He's a manager. David Ross, manager of the Cubs. I'm trying to think of other ones too, but I feel like a lot of the managers end up be were former catchers because they I think Scott Servais is the Seattle Mariners manager, and he was a former catcher too.
They see so much more of the game, I think, than anyone else on
Exactly.
that field. And they're also interacting with the coaches and the manager and relaying information to the pitcher. So they see so much and they understand that, and they've got that relationship with the coaching staff that I don't think anybody else out there on that field has. And that I think that makes them great candidates to be coaches and managers. Let's talk about these other players that you may or may not have heard some of these names I'm about to roll off. But they're going to have an impact because they have been drafted by Major League Baseball. They're going to have an impact on ACC baseball. Benny Montgomery, Harry Ford, Khalil Watson. Now, unless you keep a really eye on ACC baseball, you're going, I don't know who these people are. That's because they're coming directly out of high school. And the reason that they're going to have such an impact on ACC baseball, Benny Montgomery, outfielder, Redland High School, committed to UVA. Well, we can safely say, unless something dramatic changes, that money talks, baby.
Hang
Okay,
on.
so he gone. That's right. He's going to the Colorado Rockies. As far as we know, I mean, that could change, right? It could be
In all likelihood, he's. I mean, I like you said, it's all about the Benjamin. So he'll be joining the Rockies
That's right.
organization. I can't see him turning that down.
What's the name of that movie with Brad Pitt and the Oakland A's? We talked
Moneyball.
about, yeah, Moneyball. There's an example of somebody coming out of high school and, well, didn't quite work out. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Yeah, we'll see. He went at number 8. So Virginia losing out on a really hot recruit there. Next, Harry Ford, a catcher, North Cobb High School. He was committed to Georgia Tech. He goes at number 12. So there's one out of off the recruiting roster for the Yellow Jackets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like I said, going 12th, you gotta take that money.
Yes,
no doubt about it.
And then at number 16, we have Khalil Watson, out of Wake Forest High School, committed to NC State, and he's headed to the Marlins. So there you go. There's three of the top 20 recruits having an impact on ACC baseball. Mm-hmm. My question for you is, recruiting high school players. It's a mixed bag for me for any sport to be able to do that. I understand sometimes why it happens. I mean, you see some of these kids, honestly, there's a couple of these recruits that are like 6'6", 230 pounds, and they're pitchers. And it's like, holy smokes, this kid is coming out of high school. What?
He could play shooting guard or small forward for the basketball team.
Exactly. This is part of the reason why the NBA goes after some of these kids too. You know, I mean, hey, it's there. But at the same time, I just, you know, there's so much pressure. And there's some of these kids are good at it and some aren't. And it's that for ever non-ending conversation that we have about, we don't know the situation at home. We don't know what type of economic situation they're in. And it may be this is the best thing that they could possibly do. So it's, you know, every time I see this, though, it runs around in my head. What if? Mm-hmm. And there are some players who have been drafted early in high school who went on to college and who look back and will say, I'm glad I did that because it gave me an opportunity to really polish up my game and maybe grow up a little bit. But not everybody is like that. Not everybody's like,
right.
And we don't hear the other side of the story, at least not enough, I don't think.
Right. And like you said, some people feel like they're ready to make the jump right away. And some people feel like, you know, I mean, even if you're drafted in the middle of the first round, you kind of bet on yourself thinking, oh, I can go to college for a couple of years. I think it's 3 years and then go back into the draft and improve your stock and make that money. Make more money than we do, but some people choose to take that money right now. And like you said, it's all about situation. Maybe their parents are well off and they can afford to wait a couple of years to, you know, make the money, or, you know, their mom and dad, or maybe it's just a single parent, you know, doing it all by themselves. And taking the multi-million dollar deal is going to, you know, help the family financially. So you can't fault a kid for trying to do that either.
Indeed. But as long as these situations occur, there's always going to be that question mark. And it will be something that will be raised. We'll talk about it. And I guess we'll continue to reiterate just what you said, Will. Is that, you know, until we know the situation firsthand, what's good for the kid, what's good for his family, and that's really what that matters. It's not whether or not Benny Montgomery is not going to UVA. Sure, we'll miss you, Benny. Or Harry Ford is not going to Georgia Tech. They'll miss you there. Or that Khalil Watson isn't going to NC State, the Pac-9. We'll find a way to move on without you. But, you know, best of luck to all three of you guys. And if you go in and you play, I wish you the best of success. I hope that we're reading and seeing you in the years to come, doing just what Buster Posey is doing. So let's talk about the rest of the picks here. Yesterday was the first day of the draft, which, you know, was a good time, I guess, to start that. And then today they picked up the steam and just were just rolling through one after the other. And honestly, it was a little much for me to keep an eye on that and to do the other things that I was doing. But here are some of the other people that that have been drafted. And as you pointed out, Andrew Abbott out of Virginia, pitcher, is at number 53, round two, and he's going to Cincinnati. Zach Geloff, third baseman at Virginia, is going to the Oakland A's. He's at number 60 in round two. So a couple of Virginia players going there. Also, in the second round, this is the CBB, number 64, Adrian Del Castillo out of Miami is going to Arizona. So there's three players out of the ECC that are headed to major league careers. We wish you the best. Also, let's look at round three. At number 75 is Tyler McDonough out of NC State going to the Bo Sox. Number 86, Alex Benelis of Louisville going to Milwaukee. Number 89, Jose Torres, NC State. He's just got the name for baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to Cincy. At number 90, it's Austin Love out of North Carolina, and he's headed to the Cardinals, which was my favorite team when I was a young kid, and I don't know why. Dizzy Dean, something like that. I don't know.
I mean, with me, I grew up a Cubs fan because when I was little, you know, the Cubs were always on during the day because this was before Wrigley installed lights, and I grew up, and Ryan Sandberg was my favorite player growing up. And then, you know, now that I live here in Minneapolis, in the Minneapolis suburbs, I'm a Twins fan now, but you know, still, it was still really, really cool to see them win that World Series back in 2016. But, my allegiances are now to the Twins, who are now 30 years removed from winning a World Series.
Well, let's cross our fingers for you there, Will.
not going to be this year, I'm afraid.
In the fourth, Cooper Bowman out of Louisville is going to the Yanks. In the fifth round, Tanner Colehep, out of Notre Dame going to Detroit. I had to rewrite his name, and I screwed it up, so that's why I couldn't read it. And also, Caleb Roberts out of North Carolina is going to Arizona. Evan Justice, NC State, to the Rockies. Griff McGarry out of Virginia to the Phils. Ethan Murray of Duke to Milwaukee. And Luke Waddell, Georgia Tech, goes to Atlanta. Now let's move on to the sixth round. Austin Murr out of NC State goes to Detroit. Jake Smith out of Miami to the Angels. Michael Kerrion to out of Louisville to the Nats at number 180 in the sixth. It's Justice Thompson of North Carolina. He's going off to Cincinnati. Number 187, Justin Henry Malloy of Georgia Tech to Atlanta. 192, Emmett Sheehan of Boston College to L.A. In the seventh, it's Brant Herter of Georgia Tech to Detroit. And Joey Loperfido of Duke goes to the Astros. Now, couple of more picks, more rounds, not too many. Number eight, number 230, Robbie Martin Jr. of Florida State goes to the Rockies. Mike Vassell of Virginia goes to the Mets. James Parker of Clemson goes to Seattle. Lucas Dunn of Louisville goes to San Diego. One pick in the ninth, Luke Brown of Louisville is going to Pittsburgh. And in the 10th, Shane Connolly, Virginia Tech, goes to the Royals. Keyshawn Askew of Clemson to the Mets. Hunter Perdue of Florida State goes to the Marlins. And Peter Matt of Duke off to the Cubs. Speaking of which, there you go.
There's that Cubs.
That Cubs. It's not quite the same as the Bears, but it's...
Stop Bears.
There we go. That hits it right on the head. Anyway... The rest of that is we finished up with the Major League Draft portion of Monday, just a few hours before we're doing this, and tomorrow they will pick up the ball, which will be Tuesday, by the way, and they will pick up, and we will have that complete list on our website at accnation.net. Now, countdown to ACC football gets into top form with the ACC football kickoff on Wednesday and Thursday, July 21st and 22nd, as Will has reminded me earlier today. Coaches and select players are available to the media, and those conversations will be broadcast on the ACC network. That is, it will be broadcast. The question is, will you be able to receive it? Now, story back in May, David Teal of the Richmond Times-Dispatch, who's on top of anything and everything ACC. If you're not following David either on Twitter, I would suggest that you subscribe to the Richmond Times-Dispatch just for David. Of course, they have a lot of other great sports there too.
Well, yeah, I was going to say David is one of the legends of ACC, you know, coverage, and you got to read everything he does.
Yes. Anyway, David reported in May that ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips, it's still hard for me to say that's the commissioner.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten used to that yet. Phillips felt that a carriage deal between Disney, ESPN, and Comcast Xfinity might be in place by September, just in time for football. Woohoo! Two companies are at loggerheads, however, over multiple business deals. I did a lot of research on them in the last couple of days. Man, they are so tied in with stuff in the entertainment field. It's staggering how many companies they all have their fingers into. Mm-hmm. They're having a little bit of a tiff.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll see if that affects.
Yeah, I think you and I know how we feel about Xfinity. So we'll just leave it at that.
That's why I don't have it. Anyway, moving on. The NBA draft is coming up on July 29th. There's one ACC player projected to go in the top 10 of the prospect rankings from CBS Sports. And guess who that might be?
That would be Scotty Barnes.
Yeah, you are correct, sir. Florida State's Scotty Barnes is at 7. Duke's Jalen Johnson, 21. Virginia's Trey Murphy at 26. By the way, the withdrawal date, if any of these guys decide that, hey, this doesn't feel right, I want to go back and play another season, whatever, is Monday, July 19th. It's rapidly approaching. That means about a week from when we were recording this program. So here's a list of the conference players that are on the projected from NBA prospect rankings from CBS Sports from their top 100 board. Scotty Barnes, as we mentioned, is at number 7. Jalen Johnson at 21. Trey Murphy, 26. Other players are moving up, Will. There has been a significant, in some instances, and just a little bit of a nudge on a few of these. The stock has gone up. As a matter of fact, Gary Parrish, I believe, CBS Sports, was saying that he believes now that Scotty Barnes is number three behind Cade Cunningham and Jalen Suggs. So that's where he expects him to go.
I know Trey Murphy's stock has gone up quite a bit too through the workouts and stuff. I know I've seen some mocks that have him in the late teens because of some of the work he put in during the combine, and that'd be really cool. I mean, there's always need for a 6'9" guy who shoots threes and can drive in the NBA. So I think he'll do well for himself.
Yes, he will. Definitely.
Hey, Virginia produces one and done, folks.
What? No. Don't believe it. On this list, we've got Daron Sharp out of North Carolina. He's at 38. At number 49, Matthew Hurt of Duke. At number 53, David Johnson out of Louisville. Number 54, Raekwon Gray, Florida State. And if I'm not mistaken, that's a new addition to their list. I don't remember Raekwon being in there before.
I think so. You're right.
At number 56, MJ Walker, Florida State. Number 61, Justin Champagne of Pitt. Let's see. Number 66, Moses Wright, Georgia Tech. And again, I'm dealing with my own handwriting. Sorry, folks. 69, DJ Stewart of Duke.
Nice.
At number 75, Amir Sims, Clemson. Number 85, Sam Hauser, Virginia. Number 87, Jose Alvarado of Georgia Tech. 89, Carly Jones of Louisville. And at number 92, Jay Huff, Virginia. As I mentioned, every single one of these players, except for these the top three, Barnes, Johnson, Murphy, did not move on this list, this prospect rankings list. However, everybody else did. Everybody else popped up quite a bit. In some instances, in one or two, just a notch or two. But that's very encouraging. That's a great list of players coming out of the ACC. And it looks to me as if, seems to me, based upon what we're looking at here, that all of them should go. There shouldn't be anybody scooting over to Europe off this list.
Yeah, and they're borderline drafting. Some of these guys, especially that are ranked in like the 60s and 70s, will be guys you could see ending up on two-way deals, which are, they basically have a spot available on the NBA roster, but they also have a spot on the G League. So they basically can go back and forth. It's kind of like the baseball equivalent of optioning a player down to AAA for whatever the reason. And
polish them up a little bit.
Yeah. They go from play, from sitting on the bench in front of like 12,000 people to, being in front of like 1200 people.
Hi mom. Hi dad.
Yeah. Basically in front of mom and dad and everyone's mom's dads, girlfriends, boyfriends, your family or whatever. But yeah, I think one of the players that I'm intrigued by with his stock is Jalen Johnson. And the reason being is Duke was a better team without him. I just think it's so weird that a guy who has this high a draft stock, but was clearly not good. Well, he was good, but he was to the point where the team was better off without him. It's like it's so weird to see that, and I'm curious what NBA like draft people see in that, knowing that.
I think part of that, Will, it seems to me like we've discussed this a few times actually. The more I think about that, I think Johnson was one of those players that just he was the. The round peg,
that in the square
that,
hole.
That Kay was trying to put in the square hole, and he just didn't fit. And but it doesn't mean he's not talented. It just means
he's a talented player. It just maybe the fit wasn't just didn't fit. There.
Right, and sometimes that happens. I mean, even with a coach like Krzyzewski, who can look at somebody and go, well, let's put this together. Not everything lines up perfectly every time. So,
and that's kind of the, how do I say, that's kind of like the slippery slope with one and dones too, because they don't always work out. You think they'll be a good fit for your team and turns out they're not.
You're right. I mean, you hit that right on the head. One and dones are, they're a crapshoot. And, if you want to roll the dice and believe that you can take these guys in 1 year and mold them. That's even difficult look at the USA Olympic team. Mm-hmm. Just because you have all that talent on that team doesn't mean that they can all come together in that short of a period of time and really click. I mean, they got their butts beat by Nigeria.
Yep. I was just going to say.
I mean, but they, it happens. I mean, I wouldn't be embarrassed by that. You pick it up and you go, well, why did this happen? What can we do better? Mm-hmm. And you realize that you have to work together. Seems to me like some of our really superstar teams were pushed to the brink a few times too, back in the day. You know, they weren't perfect. You know, you bring all that talent onto the floor, and that's kind of an awesome thing. It's neat. Oh, you know, we got all these people on here. We've got all these stars on here. That doesn't mean that they can play together as a team. And I think we come back to Jalen Johnson. I think that's the situation that he was in.
And go back to the original Dream Team. They lost in a, you know, they lost to that college team back in 92. And then you just see what they did in the Olympics. They were routinely beating teams by 50 points. So sometimes you need a wake up call like this to realize that it's not. And I mean, granted, like international basketball in 2021 is a lot different than, you know, international basketball in 1992. I mean, we're not going to beat many teams by 50 anymore. I know like the U19 team beat South Korea by like 70 something points, but
that's unusual.
But like the top of the heap.
That's right.
Like we're seeing all these players now come over from these European countries and they go back and represent their countries in the Olympics. And it's, you know, they're staying right with the Americans now.
That's right. Yeah. And the thing is too, with, I saw this in AAU ball. You have, if you don't have a structured team to begin with, you know, if you're not running a structured offense, a structured defense, and you don't have that capability of doing it, and you're just kind of letting everybody freewheel it out there, you can typically bring in a less talented team onto the floor, run fundamentals against them and beat them, or at least get pretty close to it, because it just throws teams off. And I've seen this a lot. Like I said, AAU is a whole different ball game than you know, even getting into high school or college. But the basics are there, is that if you have teams that are just freewheeling it, as opposed to having some kind of structured play or the ability to fall back on some kind of structured play, then a structured team can come in and decimate you in no time at all. I don't know what exactly happened with the Nigeria game because I didn't watch any of it. I haven't been interested, to be honest with you, to look at it. But at some point I will go back and look at that and just to see, you know, satisfy my curiosity. It'll be interesting to see what we'll find out by looking at that game, what really happened. And I think that was the wake up call for this team because, you know, it deflated a few players a little bit, you know, took a little bit of ego and did them in. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about football because we're getting close. Man, you have been like pounding on social media, the countdown to football.
You saw my tweet today. Yes. As of July 12th, we are 47 days until the first football game kicks off. And it's a little over that. I think it's like 51, 52 days until the first ACC game.
Right. I thought that it was amusing because I was thinking 47 days. What a random number to choose, man.
I don't know. I was just curious my own self because I'm like, I've been, you know, thinking about, you know, when the season was starting and how close we're getting. And I knew at some point we were going to start seeing. It's so funny. Like I did that and all of a sudden this afternoon, you know, the ACC sends out a link or in a tweet about the players who are going to be representing each school at kickoff this year. And I'm like, huh, funny.
Yeah. Timing's everything. That's going to be an interesting, an interesting program because I was looking at the list and I'm that kind of pumped me up when you sent that to me and I was looking at it. I'm just going, wow, boy, this is a nice list of athletes. I'm really excited to see what they have to say and to watch that. That's always a lot of pleasure. Mm-hmm. You and I have not together gone to the ACC football kickoff. I've been before a couple right. times, and I know that's something that you and I have talked about, that this is something that you must do, because it is absolutely, it's a pleasure just to go. Mm-hmm. It's very enjoyable.
You mean they let this beard in there?
maybe not. I don't know. They do have they do have this like TSA type of crew, and they have a scanner. So the scanner is set up to only allow people with beards that are so long through. So you may not be able to get in.
Your beard must be this short in order to enter. So basically, I have to be like a New York Yankee and shave.
That's right. That's right. No, I don't think so.
Yeah. No, I look too much of a baby face.
Okay. we'll have people comment on that. Does Will have a baby face? Okay. Let's talk about what Phil Steele sees with ACC football. I have never seen so many ties except in my own closet. In how Phil has, Phil has the Atlantic and the Coastal set up in such a way in his ranking, his setting things up here. I was like, what? When I first saw it, I was thinking, this is a misprint. This is something not right here. And just to give you an idea, in the Atlantic, we've got Clemson at number one. Now, we expect that, right? Okay.
Yeah.
No problem. But tied at number two, NC State, Boston College, Wake Forest, Florida State, Louisville. And then at number seven, there's Dino and Q's crew. Then over in the Coastal, we've got UNC and Miami, and that makes a lot of sense. And then tied at three, we've got Pitt, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Virginia. And then David Cutcliffe down at number seven.
Wait, we gotta quote Michael Avenatti. And then there's Duke.
And then there's Duke.
And Duke, I think, is the actual tweet.
Yeah. So let's go back to the Atlantic here for a second. Mm-hmm. You know, Clemson looks pretty solid again this year. We don't know what they're going to have. I think this is one of these situations, and I hate to say this, it bothers me because I've seen this with basketball for years. We always get these preseason polls and everything. Everybody goes, hey, it's Duke. It's nobody else. It's just Duke. Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's not. And now they're doing the same thing with Clemson because Clemson's been there so many times before, and they just seem like this never-ending, they're the Kraken is what they are. And everybody goes, well, it's Clemson. There's nobody else in that conference. There's nobody worth talking about. Not true, my friends. Not true. But Clemson being at number one in the Atlantic, I got that. Okay. But here's the crazy stuff. Why would you have so many teams tied for second? What does this tell me about the approach to ranking these teams? Is it telling me a positive on one end or a negative on the other? Or is it just we threw up both hands because we didn't know what to do?
Well, I think in this instance, I think it's a positive, really, when you think about it. I mean, they say Clemson, yeah, it's going to be Clemson until someone takes them down. Even though Trevor Lawrence is gone, Travis Etienne is gone, we're just assuming that DJ Uiagalelei and like Will Shipley, who a lot of people think will start a running back as a freshman this year, and a lot of other guys, that they're just gonna pick up and pick up where these guys left off. And that's not always true. I mean, you're looking at two of the best players in the ACC in the last, I don't know, decade, maybe. I mean, that might be stretching it a little bit, but we saw what DJ did in the two games he played last year against Boston College and Notre Dame. Granted, they lost to Notre Dame, but not many true freshmen go up to Notre Dame and put up the stats he did, even in a losing effort. And I think for the most part it is for real, but I mean, again, it's there's tape on him now, so people know what to do with him. But we don't know anything about the running back position at Clemson yet. And a lot of people are high on Will Shipley. Lynjay Dixon's still there, but we don't really know. But then you get to the other teams. NC State, they return. They're going to get Devin Leary back healthy. They have the deepest running back core in the ACC with, Bam Knight, Ricky Person, and Jordan Houston. Their wide receivers are back. I think NC State lost like one player on defense, and that was Elaine McNeil, who's in the NFL, at least of starters. And you got Boston College, who I've been high on since the beginning of the offseason, really, because they returned Phil Dracovic. We know if anyone watches Zay Flowers, that kid's a touchdown waiting to happen. And defense should take a step forward. They return a lot. Remember, they were really bad a couple of years ago under Steve Adazio. Took a big step forward in 2020 with Jeff Hafley and his crew. And you think with that'll be a big help. I think that can improve some more. Plus, their schedule, you look at Boston College's schedule, pretty favorable. I mean, obviously they're at Clemson. Yeah, you're not expecting them to win at Clemson, but they get NC State at home, who is, right at their level, and Wake Forest, who I'll get to in a moment, right, also right on their level. Florida State at home, Virginia Tech at home, their road games at Louisville, that's an interesting team we can dig into another time, but, they're at them, at Syracuse, who will be at the bottom of the league this year, and at Georgia Tech, who is an interesting team, but I still think they're a year away. So it's a very manageable schedule. Now, the thing about Wake Forest, the entire offense is back. They've got Sam Hartman back. The only player they lost of any substance was the running back Kenneth Walker, who transferred. But their leading rusher Christian Beal-Smith is back. Their receivers, who a couple of them absolutely blew up last season. We all expected Donovan Green to kind of be the guy, but we saw Taylor Morin and especially Ja'Cory Roberson, who's probably going to be first team All ACC this year by the end of the season. That kid absolutely blew up last year. The only question with Wake is obviously they lost Boogie Basham. He's now in the NFL, and he was just a menace to opposing offenses. And that is something, but they still return, I think 8 starters or 9 starters on defense. That's a team with a ton of experience. And we've seen the evolution of the Clawfence. That is a team you cannot take lightly.
Good points. And we're going to get into these teams a lot more in detail, just to let everybody know that, being that we're back, we took some time off. And so
we took some time off and then all hell broke loose.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. That's one way of putting it.
Anyway. I don't wish, I don't wish people go through what I've been through the last week. I go follow my Twitter feed. I'm not going to get into it here, but it's been a rough few weeks. I ain't going to lie, but I'm here.
Yeah, that's right. Live and kicking, man. Yep. Live and kicking. But we are back. And like I said, we're going to start getting into depth. We've got a lot of people. We're beginning to line people up guest to come on, talk about some of these programs before the season gets underway full-fledged. We may have some extra podcasts. Typically, we only do one a week. We may be doing more than that, more interviews, just to give you a flavor of what's going on with a couple of these teams in particular.
Yeah. Hashtag content.
That's right. Content, baby. Let's go over to the Coastal. So we've got Phil Steele has got North Carolina sitting on top. Mack Brown, he's got a monster team on his hands here. Yes, he lost some critical pieces, but he also got back an awful lot of, it's a staggering team. Let's just leave it at that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Miami, who also, believe it or not, and I don't know if Will's going to jump on this bandwagon or not. I am. I think the more and more I start doing research on, or have been doing research on Miami, I think Miami is much more for real now, finally. You know, I've been tired of hearing this, the U is back for the last 20 years and nothing ever transpired. I think Miami maybe not totally 100% back yet, but I believe that Manny Diaz is really building this team slowly but surely and going in the right direction. So I think he's got a team on his hands. He's got a, you know, if Derek King is going at 100%, North Carolina and Miami, I think their game together is October 16th.
In Chapel Hill, which it's October 16th in Chapel Hill, which will be Miami's first road game of the season, folks. Oof. True road game.
Wow.
Obviously, the Alabama game is on a neutral, It will be a road game because, you know, it's Alabama.
Yeah. That is going to be one heck of a game. I'm really looking forward to that. And so, again, the teams that are tied for third, Pitt, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Virginia, and then Duke at number seven. Let's look at these. Let's look at this lineup here. Will, start with North Carolina and work your way through these teams.
Yeah, I think the thing with North Carolina is obviously you got Sam Howell, who is a Heisman candidate this year. You know, the questions with North Carolina obviously are how they're going to replace all the talent they lost. Is they, you know, obviously they lost their top two running backs to the draft and their wide receivers to the draft, but Mack Brown and crew have really crushed it in recruiting these last couple of years. They're really, really building, and it's kind of one of those things where you kind of see a next man up thing. I don't know if they're going to be quite as talented this year as at running back as they've been the past couple of years. They don't have that thunder and lightning dynamic that they have had, but you know, Sam Howell knows how to get the ball to receivers. I don't think we're going to have to worry too much about that. Yeah. Miami, it's an interesting case. You know, I see the talent, but I mean, everything is going to be reliant upon Derek King's health. When the game starts, he's going to be 9 months removed from, you know, from his ACL tear. What is his mobility going to be like? That's been the thing I've been harping on ever since he did it. I mean, everyone, and he announced he was coming back, is like, don't just assume he's going to be himself right away. Anybody who's torn an ACL tells you that it really takes a while to be yourself again. I've said this in the past. I think the strength of this team defensively is in the secondary. I like their secondary. Bubba Bolden is someone who I think is really good. Who's their starting safety. I think he has some all ACC potential to him. If you want to pick warts in this team, there are. I mean, they were the most penalized team in the league that last year. I don't even think it was all that close either. Needed two big time comebacks to win. So Like I said, their schedule is manageable early on. Alabama, I mean, you kind of expect them to lose to Alabama, but they have four straight home games against App State, Michigan State, Central Connecticut, and Virginia before they go to that road game in Chapel Hill against North Carolina. But they do play NC State. That's going to be a tricky game. At Pitt will be tricky this year. They go to Florida State, and we'll wait and see on Florida State. And then Virginia Tech at home and Duke. So, like I said, I've been a believer in about an 8-win Miami team this year. I've seen some people say 10 wins. I think that's asking a bit too much of this team this year, but 8-9 is a little, I think, is realistic. I'm curious what people see in Pitt though, because I'm not there. Kenny Pickett is a good, he's a good college quarterback. I think the thing where a lot of people see the improvement is they finally had a viable option on the outside. Jordan Addison kind of emerged as a freshman and was he did quite well for them, for the Panthers last year. Mm-hmm. But he's literally the only good offensive player they have. I mean, the running game has been a mess ever since James Conner left for the pros. The defense, that, they've had an amazing defensive line for the past few years, just churning out draft pick after draft pick, but they're all gone. So you kind of figure they'll take a step back this year. Their safeties are gone. They're only returning like six. They return six starters on their defense, but the five that are gone are all in the NFL, right? Or they're getting ready to start their pro careers. So you can't just assume it's going to be a next man up. I know Narduzzi does a really good job with that defense, but I am very skeptical about Pitt this year. Virginia Tech is a team I think is, I said this a few months ago when I was on the All Sports Discussion podcast with Matthew and Jeff. There's the team I just have no idea what to think. I think they're actually, their skill, their wide receivers and tight end are really good. James Mitchell's a really good tight end. They get Trey Turner back for what I feel like is his eighth year. and Tavion Robinson was really good for them too. They're top three receivers for the Hokies. Braxton Burmeister, inconsistent at times, but played a little bit better at the end of the season. Obviously the big thing on offense is Khalil Herbert's now in the pros. So the running, you figure they'll take a step back at running back. Defensive line's going to be a question mark. They don't have a lot of depth there. They just lost two players to the transfer portal on Monday. So they're going to be very thin at defensive line. And really the question is, now that Coach Hamilton now has a full off season, what is he able to do? It's, I kind of threw away 2020 because you're not really able to work with the team the way you wanted to. And obviously we saw all the stories, and then the reality is it's a make or break year for Justin Fuente. I even said this with Matthew and Jeff a couple months ago. I think if he's 7-5, and especially if he loses to Virginia, he's gone. Yeah. But if he gets 8 wins, yeah, he has a chance to come back unless he flirts with another job, which I guess you can't rule that out. But I don't think they'll fire him if they go 8-4 and are competitive. Virginia, let me go to Georgia Tech first. And I think I think they're a year away. I'm a believer in Jeff Sims, but he just needs a little more time. He showed a lot. He was a little mistake prone at times, but that's what you would expect from a true freshman sometimes. And he's not like the most gifted football, right now. The potential is there. Obviously you love the running back position there. They are really deep there, too deep. Jameer Gibbs, Jordan Mason, those guys. I know Mason missed a bunch of some time last year, but we saw Gibbs, that player right there is, yeah, he's the real deal. And the defense, that's got a lot of question marks. That's the thing that holds me back with Georgia Tech. And obviously Coach Collins is doing a great job recruiting. I know he's brought in a lot of good talent. It just hasn't clicked. I still think they're a year away. Virginia is an interesting team though. They have I really like this offense. Brennan Armstrong, he played better than I expected last year. but he still had those. He still had like one WTF throw per game, and you it kind of left you shaking your head. Running game, you know, there's not one like breakout guy there. They just have a like they're probably going to rotate in three to four guys: Wayne Talapapa, Ronnie Walker, and get Mike Hollins back, who sat out last year due to COVID. Wide receiver, obviously, Lavelle Davis got hurt in the spring game, and they most people thought he'd be back. He wouldn't be back until November. I did see a thing from Jamie Oakes over at 24/7, who covers Virginia there, that he was spotted out walking without a knee brace. But I don't know how much stock to put into that. I'm not going to put a whole lot into it right now. But they do get Dontavian Wicks back, who a lot of people thought would emerge last season before he got hurt in fall camp, missed the entire season. But they still have great receivers. You know, we've seen Billy Kemp around for a long time. Virginia has been an underrated school in terms of developing wide receivers, and a name to keep an eye out for is Jelani Woods, who's the tight end transfer from Oklahoma, who at 6'7", and I think he's listed somewhere around 260, 270, 270-ish. That is a thick boy. Talking about a guy who could play small. He could be like a small ball three or four for your basketball team. A guy is 6'7", 270. And yeah, I really like the Virginia's offensive line. It's probably one of the best offensive lines they've had in quite some time. All the questions though are on the defense. You know, their defensive line, I would say, is okay. Solid at linebacker, even with the departures of Zane Zandier and Charles Snowden. Nick Jackson is the next star in the making on that linebacker core. All the questions lie in the secondary. This was the worst pass defense in the league last year. Gave up like over 500 yards passing to Dennis Grozel, of all people. And got torched by Burmeister in the Commonwealth Cup game in Blacksburg last year. But obviously the problem with Virginia the past couple of years is that defense has been decimated by injuries, especially in the secondary. So I feel like everyone and their mother's been hurt. So I think there was a rumor at one point that I was going to get asked to play safety. It was so bad, but they did pick up a couple of grad transfers at corner, one from North Dakota State, one from Louisville. Plus they get their safeties back. I think they'll be a little bit better this year, but to what extent, I just don't know at this point. That's going to be one of those things I'm going to have to wait and see until the season.
And we really don't have a lot to say about Duke.
Yeah, it's Duke. Yeah, there's some nice pieces, but they just haven't had a good quarterback since Daniel Jones left. I mean, we thought Chase Bryce was the guy, and he wasn't bad. Like when they opened up against Notre Dame last year, he wasn't that bad. But I think I can't remember the exact number, but they turned it over something like 40 something times in 11 games, and that's not a good rate if you want to win ball games. And now he's moved on, and I think a lot of people think Gunnar Holmberg is going to be the guy at quarterback who kind of filled in spots for him. And he did okay, but you know, you're kind of getting pushed into duty when you're probably not ready. And yeah, this is a team. I think they need to rely more on their run game this year. Return, you know, start their top rushers, but yeah, it's going to be a rough year for Duke. And then you have to wonder what the situation is with Coach Cutcliffe. They're not going to fire him. I don't think so. I think it'd be kind of disrespectful at this point. I think this is one of those things where you say, okay, let's mutually agree to move on and hire the next person.
Sounds like a plan to me. Well, that's a look at some of the football for ACC through Phil Steele's publication. We're going to share some other stuff down the road about that, and also a quick look at the MLB draft and what's coming up for the NBA draft in just a couple of weeks. We'll be back next week. We hope that you'll join us on Twitter, that you'll join us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. All you have to look for is ACC Nation. Join us at our website, accnation.net. Will is on Twitter at Will's World MN. I'm at ACC The Q. And until next time, cheers.
Score.